I'm pulling away from the curb because I dropped my son off at school. We all know what that means. It's time for their drive to work. Okay, today's topic is psychology. So I talked about, I did a podcast of meeting my dad, and then when my dad died, I did a podcast about my dad after he died, and I talked about how my dad imbued in me a love of games. Well, I had another parent. My mother, which you guys met in Meet My Mother, my mom imbued in me a love of writing and of psychology. So my mom, she's retired now, but she was a clinical psychologist. She focused on adolescence. I really from her got this love of psychology, of how do people tick? How do people work? And if you actually look through a lot of my works, for example, I talked about a play I did. My favorite play I did in college was a play called Lego My Ego, where the idea is this character is trying to make a decision and all his emotions are meeting to help make the decision. This is years before Inside Out. Or, for example, the mass market media game that I keep trying to make called Mood Swings, where you're playing emotions. Clearly there's a through line. I really enjoy psychology. So the point of today's podcast is to talk about how my love of psychology has influenced my game design, which in turn has influenced magic. So the through line is talking about how psychology has affected the design of magic. Okay, so first and foremost, let's set up a little bit. So back in 1995, I get hired into R&D. When I was hired, most of the members in R&D were members of what we call the East Coast Playtesters, meaning they were original alpha playtesters with Richard, Scaffolias, Jim Lynn, Dave Petty, and he met them at the University of Pennsylvania in the math department. They were math people. The way I like to say it when I got to R&D was, I was a word guy surrounded by numbers people. And another big thing that I brought with me was this idea of the importance of psychology. A lot of the thought process at the time, there's a lot of focus on like balancing things and such. And my big thing, like one of the things if you look at my sort of my tenure in Magic R&D is I really been a champion of psychology. In some ways, if you look, my through line of my influence is really trying to say the importance of psychology. So there's a bunch of ways I've done that. That is my topic. So first and foremost, when I went to school, I studied communications at Boston University in the College of Communications. One of the things that I learned about, so there are, I don't know, like four sections to the school. One of the areas is advertising. And so when you're in the school, even though I studied what was called broadcast and film at the time, movies and TV, even though that was my major, I still had to take classes in advertising. And in advertising, they have a thing they call the psychographic. The idea is if I'm going to sell something to somebody, I need to know why they want it. Why does the end consumer need this particular product? And that idea really stuck with me. So much so, so basically the story is, we're in a meeting one day, and I'm pitching this like giant creature. And I'm trying to explain why we put with this giant creature on the set. So I'm just like extrapolating, okay. So I go, imagine there's a guy named Timmy. And Timmy, when he opens up this pack, his eyes go wide. He sees this giant creature. Because to Timmy, there's nothing more exciting than playing the giant creature. The visceral thrill, you know. And I started to realize that at the time, R&D was very focused on what we referred to at the time as the tournament player. There was a lot of push. We were on the cusp of starting the Pro Tour. There was sanctioned play. There's a lot of focus on more serious play of magic. But my point at the time, in the moment, was, hey, that's not everybody. There's lots of different people who play magic, and they want different things, and are motivated by different things. And so I just named what I'm talking about. So Timmy would later become Timmy and Tammy. But the idea was, Timmy was me just explaining, look, there's people that want to experience things. There's a visceral thrill to playing magic. And whether or not it's just the joy of hanging with friends or playing giant creatures or just having stories. There's an idea that I would later coin. I wrote an article, I think I did a podcast on it, called narrative equity. The idea of narrative equity is that players, whenever you're playing a game, a lot of the idea of game playing in general is the sense that I want to experience things and learn skills that will be useful in the real world, but I'm playing them in a safe environment, right? That I have to make tough decisions to do whatever. I have to learn how to think critically. But if I lose, oh, whatever, it's a game. Now, there's no great harm that comes to me. In real life, when you lose, well, there's real consequences. But in a game, there's not consequences. And so it allows you to sort of test your mettle, right? So the idea that I wanted for Timmy and Tammy was to explain that there are people that really like experiencing things, that like big, visceral, like, things that maybe it's not as easy to get in their life. And the idea of narrative equity is that when you walk out of a game, you walk away with tangible things. You can learn skills, you can do all that. But one of the things that you walk away with is the idea of is stories. Something happened, I lived it, I experienced it, and now I get to share that experience for the rest of my life. I have a story to tell. And a lot of my favorite stories that come from playing Magic is just like some glorious moment happened. That's the story that I get to tell for the rest of time. You know, the time that I did 26,000 damage in a game and gained 55,000 life. That's a fun story, you know. Or just, like I said, a lot of the stories that I really enjoy are just, it shows something about the experience I have. And all players enjoy that. Once again, when I talk about different psychographics, it's not that only that psychographic enjoys that thing. They just prioritize that thing because that's what matters most to them. So Timmy and Tammy, they really want that experience. And so it is really fun to sort of have things happen. Like, everybody wants to win. That's the goal of the game. But in the end, it's not, winning is not the end all for Timmy or Tammy. Timmy or Tammy wants that, the visceral feel, the big thing, something to go on. Like, there's different, the other thing about psychographics is, and I did a whole podcast on psychographics. The idea of experience things, there's different things you experience, and there's different ways, there's different kinds of Timmys and Tammys. But anyway, I coined the term. I got R&D thinking about that. A couple of months later, I realized that there was another player that we hadn't talked about, which was me, by the way, was Johnny, later Johnny and Jenny. The idea of someone who wants to express something, right? That I want to use the game to show something about me. For example, back in the day, I was a very wacky deck builder. I loved building decks in such a way that the opponent had no idea how I was going to win. That when I won, they go, wow, I didn't see that. I loved to win in unexpected ways. And my friends actually had fun borrowing my decks and playing them because they were just fun to play. And a lot of that, what I realized is I really was trying to say something about myself, show something about myself. And that's something that Magic also does really well, that it lets people sort of demonstrate who they are. And that expression is important. And a lot of the Magic deck building and a lot of the means you play or the cards you choose or which versions of the cards you choose, there's lots of ways to express yourself. And that is the core of Johnny and Jenny. The tournament player would later get named Spike, not by me, Timmy and Timmy slash Tammy, Johnny slash Jenny were all names I came up with. But Spike, actually, somebody on the brand team was like writing up the document based on the stuff I had said, and they needed a name, so they just came up with a name, so they called him Spike. And then that caught on. Anyway, I think the psychographics were an important part of the following psychological thing that I really try to drill home, which is you want to design each card for the audience member that it's for. That the goal of game design is, like, I think early on, a lot of R&D's philosophy was like, we're just going to throw a lot of spaghetti at the wall and, you know, different people like different things. And I was sort of like, we can be more exact than that. We don't have to throw random spaghetti at the wall. We can go, oh, well, we know there's this type of player. Let's make cards for them. There's this type of player. Let's make cards for them. That we can really figure out who exists so that we can tailor things. So one of my examples was there's a card called Molten Sentry. 3 and a red, you flip a coin and it makes a token. Either it makes a 5-2 token with haste or a 2-5 token with defender. Now, this is a perfect example of a mistake that could get made when you're not properly understanding your audience. Okay, coin flipping is fun. There's an audience that likes to coin flip. That audience is Timmy and Tammy. Why? High variance. Yay, weird things can happen. I don't know the outcome. That I'm in it for the exciting moment. But notice that the choices of 5-2 haste and a 2-5 defender are very, like, neither one of those is bad. It's conditional whether it's good or bad. In certain conditions, you'll want the 5-2. In certain conditions, you'll want the 2-5. That kind of choice is a very spiky choice. Spike likes the idea of Spike really enjoys options. Because what Spike wants to say is, hey, the better player will figure out more of the time how to optimize the choice. And Spike's always looking for optimizing choices. So what we did is we took an input that's super Timmy and an output that's super Spike. Here's the problem. Timmy likes coin flips for the variance. They want high excitement. So a good coin flip card, you actually want the end result to have a little more variance between them. You want, like, kind of what you want is, hey, if I get lucky, I get more than I should for what I paid. But if I get unlucky, I get less than what you like. Like, that you're really taking a risk. That there's something, that part of the visceralness, that there's some excitement there. What Spike likes really interesting choices. But Spike doesn't like randomness. Spike doesn't like, well, there is an interesting choice to make, but it's out of my hands. I don't get to make it. So we made a card that was kind of for no one. We made a card that had some appeal to Timmy and Tammy, but then made it very spiky. And then some appeal to Spike, but then made it very Timmy-Tammy. So, like, it sort of didn't pick its lane. It didn't know what it was for. And that is a very important of the psychology, of the thing that I was trying to sort of get through was, hey, if we're going to design for our players, let's understand them. And not just let's understand them, what motivates them? Why? Why do they like it? And that's a lot of sort of getting in the heads of what exactly do they like? What does Timmy and Tammy like? What does Johnny and Jenny like? What does Spike like? Like the idea that Spike really likes choice because choice allows optimization. Oh, let's understand. You know, Spike is all about proving themselves. So the more you give them mechanics that the better player will play more efficiently, you know, the more they like it. Like one of the best Spike cards ever was Fact or Fiction, where you have to divide up into two piles and then pick. And the idea is there's lots of choice and decision. Being good at Fact or Fiction is just really tricky. Like the better player you are, the better you are at it. And that's really cool. Okay. The other thing, well, there's many things. The next thing, when I got to Wizards, was it turns out that Richard Garfield did stick some psychology in the game. It was called the Color Pie. So the five colors each had a philosophy. They had an ethos. They cared about something. Their philosophy led to strengths and weaknesses. It was just, it is the psychology of the game of Magic, the core of the psychology. And I was instantly drawn. And I think that Richard had a really good intuitive sense. The colors, the philosophies baked into the basic game are amazing. But one of the problems I found when I got there was a lot of alpha was Richard would introduce things and then people would extrapolate off them. And that I found that I was the person that really was enamored with the color pie. That other people there, let's make the cards we want to make. And I remember, like, 5th edition, they wanted to put Desert Twister in. And I was like, that's not what green does. It underlines green's weakness. And a giant fight. And by the way, it ended up going into 5th edition, mostly because there wasn't other good options for green cards. But it really was me, like, laying the groundwork for, hey, guys, the color pie matters. It's important, and it should dictate things we do and don't do. That Magic is a better game when white means something and represents something. And my fear was, without care, we keep making cards. It would just bleed away. that, you know, in order for the color to care, we really need to be vigilant about it. And so one of the things that I did was I became a champion of the color pie. Now, there was a period of time where I was the champion of the color pie, but eventually we got to the Council of Colors, which I'm very happy with, which is now there's an entire team. It's not just on my shoulders. There's a whole team. And it's really, really great. I love investing in the idea that there is a team and there's people dedicated to it. It just really strengthens the importance of it. And we've solidified into the process that there's people paying attention to that. And I think that's super important. Like, it's another big nod that I give psychology. My love of psychology really made me embrace the color pie and protect the color pie. Okay, next, another big philosophy thing. So one of the, I've told the story about how I went to a creative writing class and the teacher said, everybody has a theme, so if you're a writer, understand your theme. I think my theme as a designer, as a game designer, so I did a talk at the Game Developer Conference back in 2016, the GDC, and I did 20 lessons for 20 years, 20 lessons. The very first lesson, which is my core lesson, is don't fight human nature. That a lot of my belief, the sort of the core of my game design philosophy, is tying it directly into psychology. The idea is people are going to function in a certain way, that our brains just work in a certain way, and that your game could play into that, to play into human nature, or it could fight against human nature. And I just feel like fighting human nature is most often a losing task. My example is we were making Suspend in Time Spiral. And the idea of Suspend is it's an alternate cost. It's cheaper. But if you pay the cheaper cost, you have to exile the card for N turns, some number of turns that it tells you. And then every turn, you put that many time counters on it. Every turn at upkeep, you remove a time counter. When you remove the last counter, it enters the battlefield. So people would do that. They take their creature, they exile it, wait 4 turns, and then as soon as they enter the battlefield, they'd attack with it. Now, technically, the card doesn't get cast until after the 4th turn or whatever, it casts the card. Well, we have a rule about when you cast creatures, they have summoning sickness, they can't attack the turn, And so we would try to do all these things to remind people, hey, remember, you're casting the creature, it's got summoning sickness. And we would do a lot of things to try to remind people. But no matter what we did, they kept attacking with the creature. So finally we said, okay, they just want to attack with the creature. Fine. We'll add haste. Let them do it. Let's just let the mechanic do the thing they want to do. And it's funny. So Eric Lauer, who became head developer after Time Spiral, a ways after Time Spiral, I remember he always hated Suspend. Because Eric is a very logical person. And the idea that we did something because we were sort of following the psychology of the players versus just the logic of it drove him nuts. Eric and I would butt heads all the time. It was very classic left brain versus right brain. That he was super logical. So he wanted everything set up super logical. But I was very psychological. And I would say, oh, well, look, people don't want to do that. And a lot of my guiding principles has been, like, one of the big ideas, in my talk I talk about is you want to make the fun part of the game the correct strategy to win, right? You want to figure out what's fun and then make sure that's the right way to win. For example, there's a mechanic I made in Unhinged called Gotcha, where if your opponent does the wrong thing and you say gotcha, you can get your card back. And some of it's talking or laughing or touching things. And the problem was the correct way to play against gotcha is to clamp down. Stop talking. Stop laughing. Stop enjoying what you're doing. Just don't do anything. And like that's not fun, right? And there's a big lesson on that. Players will do what the game incentivizes them to do. But you want them to enjoy the game. So you got to incentivize them to do what inherently is fun for them. And that has been a very, like, that truism, the idea of, there's a thing I in Hollywood, when I worked in Hollywood, every once in a while I'd work on something where we got an animal wrangler. And the idea is whenever there's an animal on a Hollywood set, there's somebody who usually owns the animal, but at least trains the animal, who is with them, the trainer. And the idea is the trainer talks to the people with the script and think, okay, what do you need the animal to do? And a lot of animal wrangling is just understanding your animal so that, I mean, there are certain animals that are trainable. You can train a dog, for example. But a lot, like just say you want a spider to crawl across the screen, for example. So you get a spider wrangler. You're not going to, okay, when I say action, spider, walk across, right? You have to figure out how do I make the spider do what the spider wants to do? Oh, well, the spider likes sugar or whatever. So you can make a little sugar line. So it'll follow the sugar line. Like, you can do things so that it'll do, and a lot of that is how I think of human nature, which is players will push in certain directions. You want to sort of put your things in the directions where you know players will go. So for another example of this is, in my college communications, one of the classes that they required us to take, it was a required course, was called aesthetics. And the idea of aesthetics is you studied, the way I like to say it is the science of subjectivity. And what it meant is, okay, let's learn how the senses work. How do you see things and hear things and touch things and taste things and feel things? How does the brain actually work? And you start learning, like, there's just things the brain likes. The brain likes symmetry. The brain likes patterns. And there's just things that are how the brain works. Because a lot of the idea of communications is, hey, if I'm going to make content that's going to make the players happy, I need to understand what makes them happy. Kind of like the psychographics. If you want to sell something to, I got to know why you like it. So, for example, one of the rules I made many years ago is the 4-in-1 rule. And that is, if you have a cycle, you cannot have 4 of the cards do something and not have the 5th card also do it. You can have a cycle where it's 3-1-1 or 3-2 or 2-2-1 or 1-1-1-1. I mean, you can do things where you mix up what's going on. But if 4 of them do it, the 5th one has to do it. Pattern completion is so, so strong in the human brain that if you just make the wisp of a pattern, people want to complete the pattern. And we see that all the time. If you read my blog regularly, like people are like, oh, you made card A, B, and C. When are you finishing the cycle? Even though it wasn't a cycle, but they can, you know, you can connect the dots so people want to see it as a cycle. And then I'm not poo-pooing that. Like, people will see those patterns. You have to lean into that. Another real important sort of moment, psychological realization I had was we were making Zendikar. So the Zendikar was all about, I wanted to do a land focus set. I thought there was a lot of mechanics in land. I think I called it Lanzapalooza was my nickname. I was more passionate with the idea than the rest of R&D. And so when we finally got it on the schedule, I got Randy Bueller, my boss at the time, to put it on the schedule. Bill Rose, who was the head designer, I think, at the time, said to me, he goes, look, Mark, I'll be honest, I don't have a lot of faith in this idea, but I have faith in you. So here's what I'm going to do. Get your team. I'll give you 3 months. Make stuff. And then at the end of 3 months, we're going to see it. And like, if you prove to me it's there, okay, fine, we'll do it. But if at the end of 3 months, I can't see it, we're going to change. We'll change the theme. And so for 3 months, we worked on land mechanics. We made like 40 land mechanics. And one of the areas we messed around with for a while was the idea of the land drop as a resource. Oh, well, instead of dropping land, you could enhance the spell or make it better or creature has an activation. But what ended up happening was, we incentivized people to do stuff that wasn't good for them. People would do the thing we were incentivizing, but they would not play land, and then they would get mana screwed and have bad games and not win. And I don't know how many of you even understood why they weren't winning, but they weren't winning. And then we tried it inverting it. We're like, okay, well, what if instead of kind of punishing you for playing a land, what if we rewarded you for playing a land? What if playing a land, we gave you a cookie? Play a land, we gave a cookie. And the response we got from people was, this is awesome! I was going to play lands anyway! Thanks for the cookies! And it really made me realize the importance of that. I think early R&D, because we were so focused on tournament play and competitive play, we really got into this idea of tension. And like I said, a lot of game playing is like doing real things, like learning real skills. And I'm not saying there's not a place for tension in the game. Of course there is. It's a mental sport. And you do want to create interesting decisions. But that's not all that the game can be. Part of the game also can be letting people enjoy the things they want to do. That's a lot of psychology. And Landfall really, really, like, was a... major game changer in this idea of, hey, we can, everything doesn't have to be tension. Everything doesn't have to be making a decision. That it could just be reward people for the things they enjoy doing. And that has been very fruitful space. It really opened up. And it's a good example of how it took something that, I mean, that's my big lesson of today is a lot of the lessons that I've had as a game designer and a lot of the truisms I've learned as a game designer is people are people. Humans are humans. And that, like, fundamentally, what are we trying to do as a game designer? What is we're doing? We are trying to create an environment where the player has a good time. A lot of that is, it's fun. It gives them good times. Some of it gives them challenges. It's not, a lot of the cool things of letting people test themselves is you can, like, it's okay to have tension. It's okay to make tough decisions. I don't think you want all of that. I think you want a mix of that. And it's also okay to, like, let people be who they are. Let, you know, I want to experience things. I want to express things. I want to prove things. Okay, let the game, let them do that. Like, if the players want to do something, and that's all, kind of to take the crux of all I'm talking about today, that there are certain desires that players have, that people have, and that you, as a game designer, a lot of what you are doing is figuring out how to align that. How do I make that happen? And that, like, for example, another big shift that's happened in R&D is really embracing the idea of casual play. Early Magic, like, for example, when I made Unglued back in the 90s, it was seen as like, oh, well, there's normal play, that's all the tournaments, and then wacky play, and we'll let Marco, whatever, do what you want to do. And over time, the idea that, like, more people play casually than competitively. Once again, not that we shouldn't make the game fun for competitive players. We can, we do, we should. But that a lot of what drives people playing Magic is the psychology of it. I mean, it's one of the reasons Commander's become such a runaway hit. That, you know, there's something super fun about, hey, I can make my thing and do all sorts of weird things and use cards from all over Magic and show off what I'm capable of and create high swing moments. Like, in some ways, Commander does a really good job of hitting on Timmy Tammy, Johnny Jenny, and Spike. For example, Timmy and Tammy, it's high variance. It's 100 cards. It's one of. Like, it's, and you're playing cards from throughout Magic. So, like, crazy big things are going to happen. Stories are going to happen. Moments are going to happen. You are going to experience things. And it's social and it's fun and you're laughing with your friends. And, like, it is really meaty for Timmy and Tammy. For the Johnnies and Jennies out there, you have access to almost all the cards in Magic. You get a commander, so you can make a theme, and you can pick a commander that no one else has picked, because there's lots of different commanders, and, like, you really can show who you are. The commander, like, commander format, the deck building, really says, hey, look at me. And you can do weird and wacky combos, and the nature of having so many different cards means you can really build decks that really show off all sorts of things. And a lot of the goal of Commander is finding the route to victory. There's a very Spike component to it. Is, hey, my cards are not showing up in the order. That it lacks some of the consistency, but there's a lot of skill testing in. I got to make it work no matter what comes my way. And so, like I said, Commander really hits all the psychographics in a pretty cool way. I mean, given, I will admit, the Spike is the least of the three, and that's why competitive play is where Spike shines. But I think there's a lot of spikiness in Commander. Anyway, that is my through line of today. My mom imbued in me a love of psychology. I came to Wizards, and I really, whether it be making the psychographics, whether it be championing the color pie, whether it be really pushing design philosophies, make the fun the right way to win, think of narrative equity. It's okay to reward people for doing the things they want to do. All those sort of through lines, it has been a lot of the evolution of Magic. And the interesting thing right now is all these things I'm talking about are just ingrained in R&D. yes, there are years of me pushing and pushing in certain directions, but we are there now. We have a whole casual play design team. A lot of these lessons I'm saying that at the time were like lessons we had to learn are ingrained in the way we make magic now. And so I like to say psychology has won out. And game design, especially on magic, has a lot of psychology running through it. So anyway, thanks, Mom. Thanks, Mom, for viewing me with a love of psychology. It's paid off. Anyway, guys, that is my podcast for today. So I hope you learned hearing about the psychology of magic. But I am now at work, so we all know what that means, which means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. I'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.